This podcast is about your future. What if the next years of your life can be the best years of your life? When full-time work becomes optional, you'll have the time to do all the things you've always wanted to do, if only you had the time, and soon you will. But to make the most of it, you'll need to be well prepared, and that goes well beyond your financial planning. Each week, your host, Joe Casey, is inviting you into conversations with his guests to bring you insights, inspiration, and practical ideas to design your new life, a life you'll build around what matters most to you and on your own terms. Let's get started.
What are the keys to a long and healthy life? Diet and exercise, of course, but there's another big factor, and that's your attitude. Your beliefs really matter. Today, we'll be talking with the author of the new book, Breaking the Age Code, How Your Beliefs About Aging Determine How Long and Well You Live. Dr. Becca Levy, the leading authority on how beliefs about aging influence aging health, is professor of epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health and professor of psychology at Yale University. Her pathfinding studies have changed the way we think about aging and have received awards from the American Psychological Association, the Gerontological Society of America, and the International Association of Gerontology and Geriatrics. Dr. Levy has given invited testimony before the U.S. Senate on the adverse effects of ageism and has contributed to U.S. Supreme Court briefs to fight age discrimination. She serves as a scientific advisor to the World Health Organization's campaign to combat ageism. Dr. Levy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on your show, Joe.
First off, what inspired you to write this book?
Yes. So what inspired me? Well, I first became really interested in the ideas that are presented in the book when I was still in graduate school, and I had the opportunity to go to Japan on a fellowship. And my goal in going to Japan was to try to understand why they have the longest lifespan in the world. And what I immediately noticed when I arrived was how differently it seemed older people are treated in Japan from what I was used to. So I was used to seeing a lot of examples of ageism in the United States. And when I arrived in Tokyo, what struck me was the many ways that older people are celebrated and integrated into society. So I saw a lot of sort of celebration of aging in comic books and in a lot of forms of popular culture. On television, I noticed that there were many centenarians and super centenarians, people who were 110 or older, who were celebrated like rock stars on television and were featured in these reality shows, for example. And they also have a national holiday that you probably know about, which celebrates older people. So I became really interested in whether it might be possible that how a culture treats its older members may actually have an impact on aging health and longevity. And so that question inspired me to try to figure out how to actually study that and see if there was some validity to that idea. And that led to a number of research studies, which I describe in the book, which actually seem to show that these cultural beliefs really can have an impact on health span and lifespan.
What causes ageism?
Ageism, I think, is caused by a number of factors. So both individual and sort of structural factors. So on an individual level, we know that we take in the age beliefs of our culture starting at a really young age. So starting as young as age 3, a lot of children have already taken in the age beliefs of their culture, and then those are reinforced over time. But because they are taken in at such a young age and before children actually have the skills or any reason to question the stereotypes or the beliefs, they tend to sort of just take them in, and it becomes a way of thinking about giving meaning to older age. And then in addition, the negative messages that they sometimes take in from the culture can lead to a distancing between the generations. And we know that the United States has actually gone from being one of the most age-integrated cultures to one of the most age-segregated cultures. And I think because of this age segregation, there's less opportunities for the generations to benefit from each other and spend time together and learn from each other. And that can instill ageism. The ageism can instill greater separation between the generations or fear of getting older among, you know, younger generations. So that's, I think, what can happen on an individual level. But then at the same time, at the structural level, we know that ageism can come from a lot of different sources in society. So I actually had a professor in graduate school, Robert Levine, who said, when you want to try to really understand a social phenomenon, you should look to see who benefits from it, who profits from the status quo. And when you look at ageism, there are sectors which profit from these negative age beliefs. So for example, we know that the multi-billion dollar anti-aging industry profits from creating fear around aging and from generating these negative age beliefs. And we know that there's a lot of profit to be made in advertising that generates these negative age messaging about older people. And so, and also in social media is another sector that we see a lot of ageism. So unfortunately, there can be both individual level and structural level sources of ageism. But the good news is, I think that we also know that we can combat ageism or try to reduce ageism in these different sectors.
So could you please tell us about the 7.5?
Right. So the 7.5, so I think what you're referring to is a finding that came out from a study that we did to try to understand how it is that these messages about aging can actually impact aging health. So as I mentioned, when I went to Japan, I observed what looked like could be an association between how the culture was giving meaning to aging and then the actual aging experience. But so when I got back from Japan, I thought, okay, this would be really interesting to pull apart and see, is there actually scientific evidence to support what I thought I was noticing in Japan? And I really searched for a method to try to understand this. And what I came across in my search was, in this town of Oxford, Ohio, there was a sociologist named Robert Atchley who in the 1970s asked everybody in this town over the age of 50, everybody that he could find, he asked them to describe their age beliefs or how they think about aging. And so there was this really rich survey that existed. And so, but there was no health information that was attached to it. So when I found out about this survey, I searched for a way to document their lifespan, all the people who reported on their age beliefs early in the study in this town. And I came across something called the National Death Index, which is this great resource that the government keeps that records people's date of death. And so I was able to match the people in this town to information about their longevity. And what we found was that the people who took in more positive age beliefs at the start of the study, they had a median survival advantage over those who took in more negative age beliefs. They had a median survival advantage of 7.5 years. So I think that's what you're referring to. So yeah, I was quite struck at the number of years that it seemed like it made a difference by taking in these more positive age beliefs.
That's remarkable. And the reason I phrase it that way is I read an article about you several, and they mentioned that you have a sign in your office or at the beginning of class about for your students to ask you about the 7.5.
Yeah. So in my office, right. So I do have a card that this group in Wisconsin sent me. And the card actually says, ask me about 7.5. And so it was a card that this group that was trying to generate awareness about the power of age beliefs that came from some of my research studies, they made these cards to give out to people so they would start a conversation. So they both made buttons and postcards that they handed out. And so, yeah, so I thought that was great. So they sent me some of the ones that they created with the idea that the research results were something that if you could start to generate conversation about them, that they could lead people to start to think about ways to perhaps move towards reducing ageism and, you know, creating a more age-just society. So I love that that came from this group, this grassroots group that thought there was something that could connect the research to change in policy or in their community that they wanted to bring about.
So in the culture that we live in the U.S. today, as you mentioned, with the influence of the anti-aging industry, the media, et cetera, all these different forces, how can people counter negative age beliefs and cultivate positive age beliefs?
Well, ideally, we would create a culture that was very age positive, that didn't have a lot of ageism or didn't have any ageism. And I think we can work toward that. So there are signs, I think, that we're working towards a time that there will be this age liberation movement that will actively try to bring about a more age-just society and get rid of the ageism. And there's actually was a recent launch of a movement or a global campaign by the World Health Organization to combat ageism. And there are something like 194 countries that have now signed on. So there are definitely signs that we're moving towards trying to bring about structural changes to reduce ageism. But until that happens, I think it's important to also give ourselves the tools to navigate the messages that are in our society. And so in the book, Breaking the Age Code, I generated about 14 evidence-based tools that people can start to take on at any age to try to reduce some of the impact of the negative age messaging and promote the positive age messaging about aging. So to give you an example of something that we have found can be quite powerful is I developed a method that I describe in the book called Age Belief Journaling. And what it involves is for 1 week, writing down every example of aging that's portrayed that you come across. So it could be in streaming your favorite show on Netflix. It could be in reading the newspaper. It could be in a conversation that you overhear in a coffee shop. Anytime you hear somebody say something or portray aging, write it down. And then the next step is to write down whether it's a positive portrayal or a negative portrayal. And if it's a negative portrayal, take a moment and try to think, could it have been a different type of portrayal? Did it have to be presented in the way that it was with a negative portrayal? So for example, if you watch a television show and everybody is, well, and so if they have an older character who's perhaps a principal who's grumpy and mean to the kids, you know, think about, could that principal have been a different portrayal? Could it have been a positive role model for the kids? Could it have been somebody that gave, you know, wisdom and experience to the students in the school? So I think that act of sort of actively questioning when the negative messaging appears can be really important. And then the third part of this is to notice when there's an absence of older people in something that you're watching or some activity that you're involved in. So if you watch a show and everybody is under the age of 20, and then, you know, they write that down, that there were no older characters portrayed in the show. Because I think we also know from research that an absence of a member of a group can lead to marginalization of that group. And so, or marginalization of the members of that group. So what I found is, like, in 1 week, if you write down all the portrayals of aging, all of the positive ones and all the negative ones, question the negative ones, and then also write down the absence of older people or older characters, that can bring about an increased awareness of how older people are portrayed around you. And we know that increasing awareness can be the first step in trying to overcome and challenge some of the negative messaging about aging that can exist around us. And then another piece, I think, also is to strengthen the positive age beliefs. And so if you want, I can also mention a tool that we've developed to get at that, if that's helpful.
Yes, that'd be great. Thanks.
Sure. So, right. So part of, as I mentioned, it can be really important to increase awareness of some of the negative messaging and challenge it. But also, I think it's important to find ways to strengthen some of the positive older role models or positive images of aging that are around us. And so something that we found that can be effective is to record what I call a portfolio of diverse and positive images of aging. And what that involves is writing down, say, five or so positive older role models. And some of them can be from your own life, could be, you know, a great aunt, a great uncle. And some of them could be from the general world at large. So it could be from current events, a great scientist that you know about. And so if you write down five people, ideally for each one, it would be good to come up with somebody that you admire for a different reason. So that's where the diversity of images come up. So if you, so for one person you may admire and put on your list because they have a great sense of humor. Another one, it could be because they've got a great work ethic or a great sense of social justice. So for each person, it's good to think about a quality that you really admire about that person that you would like to strengthen in yourself. And we found that actively engaging in these different older role models can also start to strengthen some of our positive age beliefs.
You mentioned role models. You write about so many inspiring older adults in Breaking the Age Code. I was wondering if you could tell us about one that really resonated with you personally and what you learned from that person.
Sure. So one person that came to mind is this person that I really enjoy talking to, who is John, who is 84-year-old actor, who I actually wrote about him in a chapter that we have on memory. And he's somebody who took on this wonderful memory task of trying to learn a 60,000 word poem. And what was really interesting to hear from his experience, so he actually did memorize this poem and then shared it with his community and performed it over a couple of days. And one thing that he talked about, so he was, I thought, was this inspiring older role model. But what was interesting to me was to hear that he himself had this positive older role model that he thought of. So he had this inspiring positive age belief. So he said when he tried to take on this memory task, he thought about this cellist who performed beautiful cello sonatas in his 70s and 80s, Pablo Casals. And he said that this image of this positive, older, performing man helped inspire him and motivate him to take on this important memory task. So I really liked meeting him and talking to him and finding out about his experiences.
What did you discover in Greensboro, Vermont?
Right. So Greensboro, Vermont was a really interesting town. So I wrote in Breaking the Age Code, one of the chapters toward the end of the book, I do talk about this town of Greensboro, Vermont, which was really inspiring to visit. I wasn't expecting what I found, which was this very vibrant town that I describe as being free of ageism. And what I noticed about this town, so I just actually visited it because it was close to where my parents have moved to. And I was just on the way and has this great lake. So my family thought we would stop there and go swimming. We actually, by visiting, got to meet a lot of people in the town. They're very friendly and very willing to talk to people that come through the town. And what I noticed was a lot of people had moved to the town because they thought it was a wonderful place to get older. And they actually purposefully felt like this was a place to gather together to experience later years. And I think there are a lot of reasons for that. It's a very culturally active town. There are a lot of writers. They have a Shakespeare theater. They take advantage of the outdoors. There are a lot of skiers and snowshoers in the winter and the summer. A lot of swimmers and hikers. It's a very vibrant culture. A lot of the older people are very involved in the political and cultural life. And there are all these community groups that bring people together. So for example, I talked to an older woman who was a leader in something called the Greensboro Ladies Walking Society. So this is a group of hundreds of older women and women of all different ages. And also men are invited to they go on walks all around this beautiful community of Greensboro and also go to other places, sometimes go to as far as the Netherlands or you know, far away locations. But they are this group of sort of very social, physically active walkers who really enjoy their time together and really sort of celebrate all of their strengths in coming together. There's a lot of writers that seem to navigate there that want to go there to experience aging. And I think something that I really thought was interesting about the town is that, you know, in talking to some of the people, I was asking them, well, what do you think came first, this age positive, all the people who are moving there, who are living there, who have these positive age beliefs, or is it that the culture of the community brings about the positive age beliefs? And I think what I heard from talking to different people is it's really kind of a chicken and egg phenomenon. I think there's really a synergy going back and forth between the positive age beliefs of the people that live there and the culture which values older people. And that in turn can promote the positive age beliefs, which in turn can kind of promote this culture of intergenerational age positive culture.
Sounds like a great place.
Yes, I think so. And I mean, in the book, I had the opportunity to talk about and think about cultures, you know, around the world. So, I mean, there certainly are these really wonderful examples. So as I talked about, you know, much of my research began in thinking about Japan. In the book, I had opportunity to think about other places that also have, you know, age positive cultures. But there was something rewarding too, to see that we don't necessarily need to travel, you know, halfway around the world to find cultures that are age positive. There are these communities that are within the United States as well that I think promote positive aging and try to keep out the ageism as much as possible.
So in addition to the 14 evidence-based tools, you also have a section where you go through, I think it's 14 as well, myths and dispute different myths about aging. One of them caught my attention right off the bat because it's one of my personal favorites. You can't teach old dogs new tricks, fact or fiction.
You're right. So as you point out, I do present these 14 negative age beliefs, and then I present what I call the ammunition to overcome them. Mm-hmm. So I think mm-hmm. part of what we know in trying to navigate some of the negative messages is important to be able to have the tools to challenge them. And in putting together the book, I generated what I thought were perhaps the 14 most common negative messages about aging. And then I looked for the science to see whether they, in fact, there was any basis for them. And in every case, I found that the evidence actually went against the messaging. And there was often, as part of that, a strength that comes out from the research. So as you mentioned, one of the negative age beliefs is that you can't teach an old dog new tricks, which is a terrible expression that I think, you know, we still see. I think I actually saw that in a show I was watching yesterday. So I think that is a message that people kind of repeat, unfortunately. But the science shows that people of all different ages can benefit from the same tools of learning. So I read in the book, I spoke to some cognitive neuropsychologists. I spoke to a cognitive psychologist, Neil Charnas, who described to me this great research that's been done with older adults and has found that older adults can benefit from a lot of learning techniques. And he described some great research that he's done with older chess players. So they keep on learning new techniques for mastering, you know, these very complex chess games and keep on benefiting from their experiences of learning all these ways to navigate the chessboard. And there's also some great research that's been done with taxi drivers as they get older. They keep on learning new avenues or ways to get around the cities they're driving in. So yes, so there are a lot of great examples of learning which keeps on continuing in later life.
And that leads us to my question about what are the advantages of an aging brain?
Well, that's a good question. So there is kind of a myth. That's another myth that the brain stops developing in later life. But in fact, the science shows that there's neuroplasticity that continues in later life. So we keep on building new connections between neurons as we have new experiences as we get older. So I think that's, you know, really important part of thinking about how the brain continues to change in later life and can grow in important ways. And some of the research about skills that go along with the changing brain have shown that there are certain strengths that come with that. So for example, there's some research that has found that as we get older, we show an improvement in what's called metacognition, or the ability to think about thinking is something that can improve in later life. Also, there's been some research that suggests that the ability to solve conflict can improve in later life. So both interpersonal conflict and also coming up with solutions for larger geopolitical conflicts, that those are skills that can increase in later life. And we also, another quality that can improve is life review. So there's been some research that suggests that as people get older, they're better able to understand and give meaning to different stages of their life as they look back on it and actually reflect and find meaning and find new ways to grow from that. So I think we can find that the brain can grow and change, and there can be associated strengths that can occur.
Another topic you write about in the book is senior moments. Could you talk a little bit about those and why people think they're something that they're really not?
Right. So senior moments is an interesting phrase. And unfortunately, it's often used by people of different ages to describe moments of forgetfulness. And the problem with the phrase is associates forgetfulness with aging and makes them intertwine. But we know that people can be forgetful at any age. So, and we also know that the reasons for being forgetful can come from a lot of different sources. So it could be that you don't remember something because when somebody said something to you, that you were looking at your phone or you were distracted and couldn't encode the information. It could be that somebody doesn't take in the information because they were stressed or angry, because we know from research that being emotionally charged can impair our ability to encode information. So if we've never taken in the information, we can't bring it back or recall it. So we know that the term is describing something which it doesn't necessarily follow from the science. I mean, and also, as I mentioned, there are people like the actor I described earlier who show these great memory feats in later life. So I think the term itself is problematic because it dismisses and reinforces, it can dismiss an aspect of aging and can reinforce this stereotype that all cognition is inevitably going to decline in later life, when in fact there are many ways that we can show that there can be strengths in cognition in later life. And so in our research, we've actually found that some of the types of memory and cognition that are thought to decline in later life, we can actually improve when we strengthen and promote positive age beliefs. Yeah, so there's a lot of reason to think that that term itself is not a good term when it's described as being associated with forgetfulness and aging. But I think, you know, an alternative way to think about senior moments that I write about in the book is like, wouldn't it be great if senior moments were actually describing these wonderful moments of aging excellence? So it's, you know, that could be another way that we could repurpose that phrase.
That's a great idea. And I found it interesting that you noted it first appeared in 1997, which to me seems like just yesterday.
Right. So yes, you're right. So there is historian who found the origin, and it's amazing how quickly it's been adopted and by different cultures.
So what's the most important message you want people to take away from Breaking the Age Code?
Well, I think perhaps the most important message is that even though we know that these age beliefs are taken in at a very young age from the culture and they can be reinforced over time, we also know that they're not set in stone. So they're malleable and we can change them. And I think that has implications both for us as a society, that we could actively try to promote an age liberation movement and, you know, an age just society that reduces or eliminates ageism and then promotes and celebrates aging and finds opportunities for people of all generations, all ages. And then I think it also suggests that on an individual level, there are things that we can do to shift the negative age messaging from messages of decline to messages of thriving by actively curating the messages that we take in, and then also in reinforcing the messages of aging that are encouraging inclusivity and celebrating aging.
Well said. Thank you so much for sharing all of this research with us. Very, very helpful.
Sure. Great to talk to you, Joe. Really enjoyed our time together.
Same here. Thanks again. So let's compare notes on how you can break the age code. It's worth talking about a few practical takeaways from this conversation, because think about it. It's worth doing something that could potentially add 7.5 years to your longevity. Here are three from my notes. Number one, who are your role models? I'm making a list of five people, and I'd encourage you to do the same. And picking up what she talked about regarding age-diverse images, I think it's interesting to think of people you admire and can be role models for positive aging who exhibit different behaviors, different things they're doing. People are on your list for different reasons. For example, on my list, there's someone I admire because of their attitude about aging, the things they're involved in, and the sense of humor. Another is there because of an active lifestyle in terms of physical fitness and living right. And then a third who's on my list because of really creative pursuits, doing things that this individual really cares about and pushing himself to continue to get better and be more engaged in that creative arena. So who are your role models? Who's on your list for positive aging? Number two, challenge your beliefs. Don't just take what you're barraged by every day in terms of negative messages, comments people make, things you see on TV, movies, etc. Really think about, are you really going to notice the things that lead to decline? Or as she put, the story of thriving. Note them, use some of the tools in her book, some great, again, evidence-based tools that she offers, the way to do that. But raise your awareness of the messages. Don't just accept them. Really examine them and examine your own beliefs. Something that you are falling into, believing, challenge your thinking. And last but not least, number three, call out the senior moment comments. I love Dr. Levy's suggestion to really start to replace it with stories of positive aging. But when people make that comment, or make it jokingly, really just take a moment to say, well, actually, it's not true, et cetera, et cetera. Give them a little bit of education, but also talk about, hey, look, here's a senior moment I became aware of, I experienced, or I saw, and help educate people. Can't change the societal level of ageism, but we can make a dent in it on an individual level, bit by bit. If you'd like to share your list of role models for positive aging, send me an email, joec@retirementwisdom.com. Love to hear from listeners. I'll publish a collection of them as I receive them. So it's joec@retirementwisdom.com. And thanks again for listening.
Just one more thing before you take off. Is it time to design your new life after you graduate from the world of full-time work? Go to retirementwisdom.com and schedule a call today with Joe Casey. Working with an experienced coach like Joe can help you explore new possibilities and gain clarity on your future. Thank you for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. See you next week.